Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSR HealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer. This is Robert Mouse. This is the show where we affirm and celebrate the power of dreams, coincidence, and imagination in our lives. We have a wonderful guest today, Linda Yale Schiller. She's a psychotherapist, an author, an international teacher. She facilitates group dream circles. She takes a spirited mind-body approach to things. And she has two relevant books. One is called Modern Dreamwork, and the one we'll mostly talk about today has a cute title, clever title, PTS Dreams, subtitled Transform Your Nightmares from Trauma Through Healing Dreamwork. Welcome, Linda.
Thank you, Robert. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm going to quote you. I'd just like to quote authors back at them. Two lines from your book, that PTS Dreams, that really seized me. One is this. Dreams are alive. We're not just having a dream. We're having an experience in an alternate reality. I couldn't agree more. The dream is not the text. The fuller experience of the dream may be its own interpretation, and we need to get to that and stick with it. As Jung taught us, you reminded me of something that Jung said in a seminar in 1928, as reported by an American author who was at the seminar. Jung said dreams are living things, they're living creatures, and in paraphrase, he gave an example of how they'd been discussing the myth of the bull in the ancient Mediterranean and Middle Eastern and the Nordic worlds in ancient times, and suddenly the bull was all over the place. People turning up with dreams of bulls, a fellow came in with a painting of a bull with the sun between his horns, and Jung went on to say, you see, the dream is a living thing. As we were talking about things here, the dream was reaching out with multiple limbs and tentacles and making things happen in the world. So there's another thing, which is about the interplay between dreams and synchronicity, something that we might find ourselves talking about.
Right.
Something else you said, which resonates with me very strongly, it's something I try to get people to think about more than they might do otherwise, is this. The dream didn't necessarily end when the dreamer woke. And, of course, that has a very direct implication in a book like yours devoted to helping people face their challenges and dreams on their own ground and resolve them. But it speaks of something deeper, which also Jung came to think was important, which is the possibility that we are living continuous lives somewhere else, even that what we think is the dream is for the dreamer within that continuous life, the reality from which they look at us in our supposedly waking lives as the creatures of dream. Anyway, those two statements, I mean, alerted me to the fact that you are a real dreamer in your own life and that you're aware of the deeper dimensions of all of this. So tell us about your purpose for this book. Tell us about how you wish to help people pursue what you call the orientation to healing that is, you say, is built into us human beings.
Thank you. Thank you, Robert. I'm so delighted that you pulled those two lines from the book. And I don't think I've ever been compared to Jung before, so I'm very delighted at the analogy of something that he said. So thank you for that. He is, of course, you know, one of my main teachers. As a psychotherapist working with in the field of trauma, I've been working with people with a variety of traumatic experiences over many, many years, both personal traumas that happen in someone's personal lives and worldwide or public traumas, things such as natural disasters, war zones, climate change, hurricanes we're dealing with right now, a raft, no pun intended, of hurricanes up the East Coast. And when I have trained, I've worked and studied a variety of integrated body-mind modalities for helping people to heal from trauma. And one of the hallmarks of someone who has not yet metabolized or come to terms with or digested a traumatic experience is that they have terrible nightmares. So over the years, as I worked with people with their trauma and did dream work, I also needed and wanted to attend to helping them resolve the nightmares. Because as anyone knows who's ever had a nightmare, and I'm sure as you know yourself, they can be insidious, they can terrify us, they can infiltrate into our waking lives and keep us on edge and exhausted throughout the day, as well as bothering us at night. So one of my goals in writing the book was to provide a source of healing and a protocol for people to use to both heal from the nightmare and the fear generated by the nightmare, as well as allowing us to then move from the nightmare into the source of the nightmare, which is the traumatic events themselves. And what prompted me to write the book was the pandemic. We were all in lockdown. We were all experiencing global trauma. My first book, Modern Dreamwork, had just come out not that long before, and I really wasn't planning to write a second book quite so quickly, but I sort of felt called by the need of the world and listened, I think, to the voice of the world saying, don't wait. It's time for this to come out. So I hustled because, you know, we weren't going out to lunch or dinner, and we weren't going to the movies, and we weren't going anywhere, so I had more time to devote to writing. And kind of crank that book out as quickly as I could so it would be available to help with this level of global healing as well as personal healing.
Well, thank you for that explanation. Of course, you've listed all the external factors that play into trauma and, you know, then in turn produce dreams in which sometimes we are simply revisiting the traumatic situation or seeing it out of the collective trauma in a literalistic way. I think you say in your book that these are actually the hardest forms of trauma to deal with through dream work, when someone, for example, is having a recurring vision of something as it literally played out. You have the really horrible but eventually gentled, somewhat tamed experience of a young man who is raped as a teenager, you know, in a hotel, and keeps having the same horrible image again and again and again, and it's so literal, and it keeps coming up when triggering things come about, that finally, as I read it, his safe place is to adopt a witness perspective and stand well back from it and look at it almost as if it happened to someone else. Is that an accurate description of what happened in that case? And in any case, does it apply to other cases that sometimes when what people are seeing, what we are seeing again and again and again, is a literal situation, repeats it again and again, not a symbolic version, is it sometimes the case that the place of safety is finally going to be maybe to rise the perspective of a witness or even a higher self and distance oneself in that way?
So you have captured very well what I would say would be half of the approach or the orientation around dealing with nightmares. Many people who have experienced violent trauma, particularly we see this in veterans, will replay in their waking life having flashbacks. And the nightmares are often simply like a flashback in their sleep. So it's a literal replaying of a situation. So that is some of the kinds of nightmares that we have following trauma. The other kind are the more, quote-unquote, typical dreamish types of nightmares that are fully couched in symbol and metaphor, and they're not at all directly related, at least on the surface, to what happened to the person who is dreaming them. And with those kind of dreams that are metaphoric and symbolic, we turn first to what I call the emotional story of the dream to see where the source of it might be. Because some nightmares can be, okay, you ate a bad oyster last night and you're having trouble digesting, and that can affect your sleep and your dreams. So that would be a very, very mild, I wouldn't even use the word trauma if you had indigestion. It could be something that happened recently. It could be something that happened a long time ago. But whatever it is the person went through, they haven't metabolized it or digested it in, so that it no longer rents space in their head. It still bothers them at an emotional level. So that's when we get these dreams that show up. Sometimes they're very wild and they're full of metaphor and have mythological and fairy tale references. So we look at what the emotion is in the dream as the guide. Is this a dream? Is this a bad dream? Or is this a nightmare? So we need
to pause for a moment to make sure we agree on how we're using words, Linda. As I read you, you're saying that a nightmare reflects an unresolved issue. I've always said in my personal lexicon that a nightmare is not just a bad dream, it's an unfinished dream. You couldn't finish it. You couldn't get to the end of the story. You could face horrible things in a dream, a scary dream, but come out feeling all right with some kind of resolution. That is not a nightmare. A nightmare for me is a broken or even aborted dream, one might say, because it's unfinished. When you say undigested, I smile. I like the way you use it in the book. But, Linda, it does tempt people to go off to the dream caused by spicy pizza level of analysis when you say that the dream might reflect an undigested issue. I know, of course, you're talking about a spectrum of experience, some of which are radically, radically painful and grievous. And need deep, deep healing. And I really very much appreciate the gentle and graduated and cautious way that you advise approaching people who are just beginning to be ready to talk about any of this stuff. Your insistence on finding a place of safety. And as you get further into it, you're suggesting that people can find a safety posse. I mean, a group of allies of one kind or another who can come with them into a dark and challenging dream space. And then you even suggest, it's very interesting, that perhaps resources for safety are to be found inside the dream itself, however disturbing it initially is. So your insistence on approaching things in a graduated, calibrated, considered, compassionate way and not pushing people faster than they're ready to go, that I very much appreciate.
Thank you, Robert. And I think we are speaking the same language, and I would agree with you that if someone has upset in their dream, but by the time the dream is done, they have resolved it, then it's no longer a nightmare. So
right.
It is the
right.
Unresolved upset that creates a nightmare, not one where there's a resolution within it. And I so appreciate your careful reading, because clearly you've read the book well.
I hope you're going to meet other people actually read your books before they talk to you about them. I won't interview or comment on any book unless I read it. I mean, it's very old-fashioned. Publishers
these days. Oh, no, it's wonderful.
Not everyone
quotes me back in the same depth that you do, though, so I appreciate it. And
it's a service that I'm going to do for someone who's finished a book, which I respect, and that we deserve to have an adult conversation based upon what the book actually says. But let me ask you a couple of perhaps more provocative questions, because, as you know, I weave some elements of shamanic practice into my approach to these things.
Yeah.
You tremble on the edge of this at one or two places in your book. I mean, you talk about you're using a version of active imagination, which I very much empathize with. I very much like that general aspect of Jung's work, which you've adapted. Of course, I take it a bit further. I mean, we do what I call dream reentry, which is we plunge as deep into the dream and its unresolved areas as we can, and we sometimes dream the dream forward a long way to resolution and healing.
Right.
For example, you mentioned Vietnam vets. I've worked with them for a few. I haven't made them a specialty, but they've turned up in my workshops over the years. So here's a case for you. I had a man who was a combat lieutenant, as you Americans say, in Vietnam. And he lost all his platoon. All his platoon. They're all dead. And he's haunted for years afterwards by the dead men who seem to blame him because he's a survivor. Not survivor guilt. It's that they hate him. I think he's a rat because he survived and they didn't. Now, in Vietnam, this is called ghost sickness. And amongst Native Americans, it would be called the same. And from my point of view, whether I call it that or not, in trying to help him, I realized that we had to reach individually, one by one, to the spirits of the dead soldiers who are attached to him, and make a deal with them and explain things to them one by one. And you can say this is suggested to the dreamer, but when we journeyed together, we traveled together with drumming back into the paddy fields and jungles of Vietnam, and we met one by one the soldiers who had died and made peace with them one by one, and it was all gone. That was ended. The story was ended. In fact, I saw him quite recently, and that story is ended. So you tremble on the edge of all this. You really do. You don't use terms like soul loss and or soul recovery or soul retrieval, but where trauma has taken place, from a shamanic point of view, a fundamental part of the victim has often separated for survival. You do talk about dissociation, which is a clinical term for something that might be regarded similarly. At one point, you talk about exiled parts of the self. There you are getting very close to a shamanic description of soul loss. So can you come closer to that, or have you gone as far as you're going to go?
I can come all the way there, because the book is geared both toward a general audience and toward professionals in the field who need and use the words such as dissociation to explain. And self-parts is part of a professional style of working called IFS, which is internal family systems, that talked about these parts. But I have been a student of shamanic practices, not to the extent of you yourself, but for many, many years. And I absolutely concur that when there has been deep trauma of a variety of different forms, what we do experience is soul loss, and that the soul can become temporarily separated from the body, and part of our journey then is to reclaim that part of ourself, that spirit part that is has gone astray, and that we do need to go deep, deep into the dream and engage with the various characters, whether they're literal or metaphoric, having conversations, having dialogues, taking journeys with them back to the place where they came from, whether it's the fields in Vietnam, whether it's their father's or mother's household, whether it's the Sunday school they went to, whether it's through an unfortunate and painful spiritual or religious experience, and go back and find the people and places that we need to make peace with and lay the ghosts to rest. And I'm sure you're familiar with the hungry ghosts from Eastern philosophy, in China in particular. And it's the same kind of spirit, no pun intended, in which we do this work. Whoever we encounter when we, in the Gaia Method, which I developed, so the Gaia Method stands for Guided Active Imagination Approach. And that is broken into three parts. There's part one, the bridge between the two, and then part two. And as you were describing before, Robert, the first part is all about safety and connection. Because when someone has experienced trauma, they're not safe. They're terrified. And then when they have flashbacks or nightmares, they're experiencing that same fear. So the first thing we do before we go into a terrifying place is to rework the setting in the here and now so they can jump from the here and now to the then and there, but this time have two things that they didn't have before, and that's a sense of safety and a connection, because connection heals. So working with another, whether it's you with drumming, whether it's a dream circle, whether it's a therapist, or whoever and whatever the person, the dreamer needs, the connection helps them ground in safety. And then the rest of part one adapts looking at finding those safe people, safe objects, safe places, pets, people who are alive, people who are deceased, spiritual guides, the whole realm of consciousness and existence is available to find safety. Whether someone has it in their personal life or not, they can reach out through the soul realms to find a connection. After that, we look at the bridge, and in the bridge, we take all that posse of safety that you referenced and peek into the dream before we do dream reentry to see whether or not we might have missed something that was already there or didn't notice it or forgot to mention it, that will allow the dreamer to have yet an additional source of comfort and safety. And this is very empowering for the dreamer, because to know that something was already there inside of them that they may just have not noticed at first gives them a sense of self-efficacy in a sense, I can really do this. And then once we've got someone in a place where they feel I'm safe, secure, protected enough from the evils of the world or the evils of any other world to be able to move into that dark spot, then we go into dream reentry. And in dream reentry, we never know where it's going to take us, because when we enter the dream, we're entering another plane and we're translating from another language. And any translation from one language to another is a little bit imperfect. So as we work together, we're sort of paying attention to the simultaneous translation from the world of the dream to the language we're speaking.
I like the analogy of translation. You know, I had to learn the Mohawk language because of my dreams, and in the Mohawk Indian language, the word for interpreter is Sagawanagaratats, and it means literally someone who transplants something from one soil to another. Isn't that interesting? Active interpretation of translation extends to moving something from one soil to another, which, of course, would require familiarity with the terrain, subtlety, and care. We're talking to Linda Sherman. Her new book is ETS Dreams. Linda, what's your website? Where can people reach you?
At www.lindayaelschiller.com.
Okay, we're listening to Where the Dream with Robert Moss. We'll be back for more after a short break.
Where can you find out about dreams and the dream world? MossDreams.com. At MossDreams.com, you can find out about Robert Moss, his work, and discover the way of the dreamer. Read numerous articles and essays on almost every facet of dreams. Find out Robert's class and workshop schedule. Read reviews and so much more. Visit MossDreams.com to find your way of the dreamer. That's MossDreams.com.
Robert Moss has a deep engagement with the dream world. And now you can take a crash course from this master of active dreaming at your own pace. That's right. You can get Robert's 8 exciting half-hour programs on a new DVD set called Way of the Dreamer. Share Robert's story as a dreamer and dream healer. This dynamic 3-DVD set can help teach you how to find your way through your dreams to realize your full potential. Don't wait to learn the practical dreamwork techniques that can help you understand how to attain better health, emotional stability, spiritual awareness, and more. Order Way of the Dreamer DVDs today from Amazon.com or MossDreams.com. That's MossDreams.com.
We're HealthyLife.net, reaching and helping a worldwide audience without hype, without shock, and without shenanigans.
You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss. Pop over to my website, mossdreams.com. You'll see I have quite a few online classes and trainings coming up, and you'll see other excitements over there. We're talking to Linda Schiller. We were talking about what I call dream reentry, and she was speaking of it's dream reentry too, which is when we revisit a dream to perhaps, well, it might be many reasons. We want more fun and adventure and romance. We didn't get enough. We're interrupted. But one of the reasons, we might want to dialogue it with a dream character, which I think is something she also recommends. We might want to get the full reality of the dream, more of the experience, in which case interpretation is not required. If you have the full experience of the dream, you know what's going on, including whether it's a literal, symbolic experience of an alternate reality or something else. If you're facing something challenging in your dream, I mean, dream reentry, I think we probably agree, might be the sovereign remedy if you can manage it. Now, you might need, as Linda is stressing, to recruit a whole body of supporters, bodyguards, assistants, family, cheerleaders to get you through, and you might have to find a place of safety to start from and a place of safety inside the dream. So I'm going to tell Linda a brief story from my life, which I don't think you've heard, though others have, about what where dream reentry leads. It's one of my personal stories. When I first started living in North America, I started dreaming of the bear in a way that I didn't remember from my earlier life. I guess I had sort of Arthurian dreams of the bear as a kid. I grew up in Australia. We have koalas. They're very cute, but they're not bears. But when I started living in North America, the bear turned up repeatedly, bigger and bigger, getting inside my house. I couldn't stop it, couldn't keep it out, and now the bear is in my bedroom, larger than it could possibly be in that space, and I'm frightened because I'm in the face of something bigger than me. Well, I did what I would now tell anybody else to do, judging the circumstances. I went back inside the dream. I just sat in an easy chair, closed the curtains, wheeled myself back into the dream, wide awake. And bang, there is the bear, and it's realer than the scene around me. It's rank and feral. I can smell it. I can see the extended claws, and it takes an act of courage to step up to the bear, and I'm thinking when I do, oh, it will crack my ribs. I'm dead. It's a vision, but it's absolutely real. Well, the bear's embrace is gentle. It's a gentle bear hug. The bear wants me to swap skins with it. Seems unlikely, but there I am in the bear hide, and it's in my pink skin, and the bear wants me to dance with it. We're dancing, and even I can do a bear dance. It's not ballet. And the bear wants me to look at the heart center, and there's something like a thick umbilical that runs from my heart to the heart of the bear, pumping light essence back and forth. And the bear wills me to understand, not in human language, but mind to mind, wants me to understand this. I will show you what you need to heal. I will help you to heal others. So since then, Linda, we've sung a bear song, which I translated from the Mohawk language once I learned it, at all my gatherings. And the bear's promise has been endlessly fulfilled and renewed. And when I try to send people back for a dream reentry exercise, for example, perhaps roll all the way back to the younger self, in the face of the trauma, in the time of that challenge, I will often send them with great mother bear wrapped all around them, and that gets them through.
Oh, that's such a powerful story, Robert. It just speaks at so many levels to the fluidity of being able to travel between these worlds and between these skins, these parts of our aliveness that you and the bear did. And what you did with great courage was allow yourself to meet this dream character, which had been frightening to you, but somehow you had enough trust that you needed to do this. It was calling you. It was imperative, even though you weren't sure in the beginning how it would end. And what you discovered is what so often people discover when they are able to, I think you use the term brave up sometimes, when they're able to find the courage to turn and face the creature that is chasing them in their dreams, is that sometimes the creature is chasing them because they have a gift to give them. And
exactly.
We just have to stop and breathe and accept the gift and find that, oh, this thing I was so afraid of actually is my ally.
Right.
I just didn't know.
Rilke said with poetic clarity, the fiercest dragons guard the richest treasures. And I think it's among indigenous peoples and maybe among all ancestral traditions, if we go back to times when people knew what they were doing spiritually, we'll find that the price of getting the real ally, the price of the angel for that matter, every angel is terrifying, says Rilke, the price of forming the alliance with the true angel, with the true power animal, the Ayarun, the spirit animal in the Iroquoian language, is to brave up. You have to show courage. There will be a rite of passage. There will be fierce gatekeepers at the door, fierce dwellers at the threshold. It's not straightforward. So, you know, courage is required. Braving up is required to find the ally. And you see this again and again in your own practice. You see people finding a gift behind the fear if they're capable of finding something that will take them through the fear to claim what's waiting beyond it.
Right. And, you know, it's so interesting when you talk about the angels who are fierce because in addition to that in indigenous traditions, if we just go back to the Abrahamic traditions of, you know, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, the story of at the Garden of Eden, right? After Adam and Eve get kicked out, there are fierce angels guarding the way back, that they have to earn passage back. And one of the angels that surround us in the pantheon of angels is Gabriel. And Gaber means strength and courage. And they're depicted wielding swords. So, we have to be courageous to find the soft angel past the sword.
Something from Judaic tradition that is in your book I really love. It's Jonathan Sachs's advice on changing our understanding of the past. It's the retelling of how Joseph describes his situation to his brothers when they find him in Egypt and reshapes his depiction of the past to say, not you SOBs captured me and sold me into slavery, but it was God's plan so that all these good things would happen. The idea that we can effectively revise our past and thereby change our future and change all sorts of things along the way is a very interesting proposition.
Isn't that powerful? I think Joseph says something like, you know, to his brothers, you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. And
yes,
it was transformed. If I hadn't been thrown into a pit by you and left for dead or sold into slavery, we would never be at the place now where you're coming to me because you're having a famine. And because of my dreaming skills, I have been able to.
Yes.
And I can extend that grain to you as well. So
exactly.
He saved his whole family by the power of his dreaming.
Yes, and he saved Egypt.
Yes.
So it's an interesting retelling, and it's quite different from the way he depicted his situation when he was in jail talking to the butler, you know.
Right.
He now sees, having gone a little further forward and having gone deeper and higher, he sees the plan. He sees the divine plan, and talking about that divine plan, he, in effect, changes his past by redefining it, by renaming it. We're talking to Linda Schiller, a spirited psychotherapist whose new book is called PTS Dreams. And we'll be back for more of this good stuff after the break. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com. Get your personal dream symbols and discover the ones you dream about in Linda McKenzie's Symbols of You, a new book available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, and more.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
Welcome to Linda Schiller. Her new book is PTS Dreams. It's a pretty good read. It's got some very good suggestions about what to do when you find yourself challenged by something in your dreams that might be coming again and again, which is what we call a recurring dream. It might be something you'd rather not face, so you close the door on it and say it's only a dream. Poor strategy. I mean, my observation is that when we slam the door on something in our dreams because we can't take it, we don't want to see it, it's going to come and bite us in the rear end in waking life one way or another. I mean, Jung had the same impression. So we need some way to deal with bad dreams and nightmares, and Linda's offering us a whole raft of techniques for doing that. Linda, let's talk as dreamers about daily practice. What is your daily practice in relation to catching, recording, working with dreams, playing with dreams? What do you do in your own dream life on a day-to-day?
So there are two things. There are things I do before going to sleep, and then there are things I do while I'm awake. So before going to sleep, to be able to catch the sleeping dreams, I always keep a journal and writing material right next to my bed. And I do my best whenever I wake up to catch whatever piece of dream I can before moving. Because getting up, moving often will sort of disturb the shadowy, foggy mist of the dream, and it's gone. So if we can capture the dream and write it down, or for the people who are glued to their phones or their devices, at least type it into your device if you're not writing, or speak it, and you can transcribe it later. You want to capture it, because if you don't, it'll be gone, or you won't catch the whole thing. So for one, I have a practice of writing my dreams down as quickly as I'm able to, either in the middle of the night or when I wake up in the morning. And another thing is that if you have gotten up and you're taking your shower and you think, oh, my goodness, I had a dream but I forgot, there's a wonderful technique called positional memory, which is my favorite for recapturing a dream. If you go back to bed and lay yourself down in the same position that your body was in when you had the dream, you activate the neural networks of a body memory, and you can often recapture the dream you had that you thought you had lost. So this is a wonderful way to add to your practice. And when writing down my dreams, I want to write down what I dreamed without editing or commenting at first. I want to capture the pure essence of what came through in that altered sleeping state. And then afterwards, if I have associations or ideas or questions, I have a whole section called notes, or you can call it whatever you want, where I'll write down these notes, but then they're not interfering with my capturing of the dream itself, which I don't want to mess with until I've had a chance to really sit with it. So these are some of the practices for catching and remembering the nighttime dreams. In addition, before going to sleep, if I have a dilemma or an issue or simply a question, I might want to practice dream incubation. And I'm sure many of your listeners, or most of them probably, are familiar with spending some time before going to sleep framing the question that they would like to dream about and get some answers to. And what I put down is my kavanah, and that's a Hebrew word that means my intention. And I love the play with the language, because likaven means to point in a direction. So kavanah is pointing yourself in a certain direction. So I'm pointing my dreaming mind in the direction that I want to go before going to sleep. And then in my waking life, I can do the same thing. I'm going to be on the lookout in my waking life for the signs, the synchronicities, the uncanny coincidences that are connecting me back with my dream or my nightmare or the question that I asked. Because sometimes our dreams come in the night, and sometimes our dreams come when we're wide awake. So in my daily practice, I want to be aware of those waking dreams as well as of my nighttime dreams, and pull all these sources together when I'm pondering a dilemma or have a question that I want to resolve.
Right, thank you. Well, of course, navigating by synchronicity is the dreamer's way of operating 24/7. In the world, we'll speak just in the way of a dream if we just open our attention. So we can dream with our eyes and our senses wide open, as you're telling us. And we can get a second opinion on our night dreams as we wander around the world. I mean, the first thing that pops up might give you a second opinion. The first thing that pops up might also give you the flavor of the day. It might be a Kledon, K-L-E-D-O-N, sounds like a bit snatches of conversation coming out of undifferentiated noise. It might be your theme for the day. You didn't mention that in-between state where I spend a great deal of time. I always have hypnagogic zone, the liminal state between sleep and awake. I would say that probably many of my most important discoveries and conversations, spiritual conversations and encounters with people we can regard as spiritual teachers, have taken place in that liminal state ever since I was a teenager. It's still underrated and under-discussed in the literature.
I completely agree with you, and I think I didn't mention it because I just had to stop and take a breath, and I couldn't say it all at once. But that hypnagogic and hypnopompic state of the in-betweenness is for me like the in-between land of waking and sleeping, where we have access to both our conscious and our unconscious mind.
Yep.
And in that place, we have greater access to the realm of the soul and the realm of the spirit. And the good news is that in that in-between place, when we have access to the realm of the spirit, we also have access to our waking consciousness so we can remember and engage and learn those lessons. And I would agree with you, and I tell people who come to my dream circles or who come for consultation, don't forget to catch those dreams too, the in-between state dreams, because those come from the same place as our sleeping dreams or our waking synchronicities, and they contain many, many gifts that we don't want to ignore or bypass.
Well said. Well said. Mm-hmm. I must say, I've taken to recording the first dreams in bed on my cell phone as email. I mean, I tap on email text to myself. I rather like the fancy of emailing myself from the dream state.
That's
typically my first form of recording a dream. I love to write by hand, but I can't read my handwriting. What I do a great deal is I draw or paint for my dreams. I do that when I'm traveling. I do that really every day when I'm at home. I do it several times a week, but it's got to go on the computer sooner or later, both because I can't read my handwriting and because if you're keeping a chronological index with titles and so on, you then have a full index. And then, of course, it's easy with a search engine to go back and find things. And one of the things I like to do as a journalist is to do bibliomancy with an old journal, open it at random, see what the thought for the day is. And sometimes I can do that with a database online, just as with physical volumes. And what I do, what I discover when I do bibliomancy, with old journals, as I find sometimes that the content of a dream I recorded 10 years ago is manifesting now. Not only does it become a sort of scientific data log, as scientific as you can get in this area of a supernormal phenomena like long-range precognition, but you'll find, you know, of course, it becomes the key to developing a personal dictionary of symbols. It becomes the key to reading things in series. All right, we've got to take a pause. We both have a lot to say. We'll have a little bit more to say in the final segment. You're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. Our wonderful guest today is psychotherapist Linda Schiller, and her new book is P.S. Dreams. I'm screwing it up now, Liz. I'm sorry. It's a clever title. It's PTS Dreams. We'll be
there
back after the break.
There you go. It is a mouthful.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss. We're talking with our excellent guest, Linda Schiller, about how to deal with nightmares and how to dream more profoundly for healing, creativity, and a juicier life. I muddled the title of her new book, PTS Dreams. I mean, it's very cute. But in order not only to get that clear, but to play with wordplay the way that she does in the book, I must say that she encourages to think that PTS dreams, dreams that might reflect trauma or bad times, can become, with the right kind of dream work, PTSD, which she says means post-trauma spiritual growth. See, Linda, I really have read your book all the way through.
I certainly have, all the way to the end.
And I like that idea, you know, it consorts with the idea of spiritual emergence. It consorts with the idea that we may have to have a breakdown before we have a breakthrough.
Yes,
you're encouraging us to think that we might emerge as brighter, shinier, more lively people if we're prepared to do the work. Of course, you borrowed the phrase active imagination, a general approach, from Mr. Jung. I remember Jung saying late in life, I mean, he gives a wonderful account of active imagination in his 1935 Tavistock lectures, which I've been rereading, I mean, the clearest account that he gives us. He said, not there but somewhere else, late in life, that although he loved the process of active imagination and guiding it with other people, of course, he did it as doctor and patient, as he put it, he was fed up with trying to help people who would not do the work. Active imagination requires work. You've got to do the work. If you don't do the work, he really didn't want to know about you.
Right.
The older we get, I think, the more we
have a vision, and sometimes we actually, like, know stuff. And if people are ready, they're ready to work with you or to work with me. And if they're not ready, that's okay. But that's okay, but then they're not ready. So I can appreciate that perspective, because, you know, we can lead the horse to water, but we can't force him to drink. And what you were talking about before in terms of the moving from PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, to PTSG, post-trauma spiritual growth, reminds me of our poet, Shaman Leonard Cohen, who says, there's a crack in everything, and that's how the light gets in.
Yeah.
And that sort of encapsulates the philosophy that even from hurt and pain, we can grow, we can surpass who we were before that, and from the places where we struggled, we then can help with repairing the world. We can offer the gifts that we've learned, hard won, to help others and to help heal the world as well. And that's part of the theme of the book, is healing is possible for everyone. We're all hardwired for healing. Our systems want to move toward growth and healing.
Yes.
So when we're ready and we find the people who will support us in that, we can overcome the things that have been so difficult for us.
Yes, you say that resoundingly, and that's a very hopeful element in the book. You mentioned you have a new book coming out next year called On Ancestral Healing. One of the things that you write about in the book we've been discussing is how ancestral trauma
a dysfunctional history in a family, things perhaps from past lives as well as from past lives within the family, it might be handed down and surface in dreams, bad dreams and nightmares in a living person. Talk to us a little bit about that. You talk about how, you know, the sins of the grandfather or whatever might pop up in the dreams of the current generation. You also imply that you think that some kinds of trauma might be inherited from past lives. In other times and realms altogether.
Right. So the new-ish science of epigenetics speaks to exactly what you're talking about, where, and as I was doing research for my new book, Ancestral Healing, I was delighted to discover, I love learning new information, that when our grandmothers were carrying our mothers inside of us, all of the eggs that ever existed inside our mother, that would, one of which would eventually become us, were already there inside of our grandmother when she was carrying our mother. So in a very literal physiological sense, we do carry these threads from past generations, from generation to generation as we're born. So there's two levels of inheritance, right? One is the usual way we think about it, I have blue eyes or I have blonde hair. That's a literal inheritance. And then there's the epigenetic inheritance, where what happens in the lives of our ancestors gets passed down because we feel things in our bodies. That's why it's called feelings. So the felt sense and the physiological changes that our ancestors experienced when they were either in wonderful, delightful situations or in terrible, traumatic situations get passed on at a physiological level and can become patterns in the lives of our parents, ourselves, and then passed on to our children and future generations. So the beautiful thing is that once we become aware that these patterns exist, then we have choice. Right? Without awareness, we don't have choice. But with awareness, we can do the healing work and we can figure out what is mine and what is not mine. What have I been carrying that happened to me in my life that I need to work and resolve? And what have I been carrying that actually didn't happen to me personally, but happened to future generations? And then as we time travel back and forth through the generations, the healing work we do on ourselves now, we can send it back to our ancestors then, and in doing so, sort of the buck stops here, right? And we stop the transmission, the intergenerational transmission to our children or grandchildren. So we're healing forwards and backwards in time when we recognize the potential of carrying these things from generation to generation.
Right. Fascinating stuff. Fascinating stuff. When I think about the ancestors, Linda, I think about at least three kinds of ancestors. I think about the ancestors of our bloodlines. I think about the ancestors of the lands where we live or travel, who have ways of getting through to us. I think of the ancestors of our multidimensional soul family, who may initially appear to come from places we know not of at all. For example, when I first went to Lithuania, I found myself in Seoul country, even though, unlike many of my friends, I don't have any Lukzak ancestry that I know about. But I found myself absolutely at home in that country, in knowing things about it, and actually able to pick up snatches of archaic Lithuanian, which contemporary Lithuanians had to scramble to translate for me. I mean, as deep as that. So, and that the contact was made by going there. When I moved to upstate New York to the edge of Mohawk country, I found myself embroiled in the life of an Irishman who came to this province in 1735, and the Mohawk Indians he knew, and I couldn't get away from that till I learned their language and had exhausted all the documentary sources on his life. So these are, and this also involves ancestral healing, and I would say transtemporal healing. In other words, healing the people in the past as well as being healed in the present. I mean, I think that that is one of the things, one of the loops that becomes possible when we wake up to all the dreaming can be.
And we can do it forwards and backwards in time. We can heal the people in the past and our future lineage as well. And what's interesting is that I grew up in Buffalo, New York, which is the other end of the Iroquois Nation. I grew up in Seneca County. So I'm very, very familiar with the whole Iroquois Nation and the Mohawk people. So I am, I've been through those places where you live in my own travels growing up in New York. Me, that resonates with, I don't think at a literal level I have Native American ancestors, but at a soul level, I completely, when I was a kid, I read everything I could get my hands on about Native American life. And that wasn't just by coincidence, I'm sure.
Okay. Wakadariantore. I know this matter also. Wonderful talking to you, Linda. We'll be back basically to say Niawa. Thank you. In Snowhawk. You've got me going now. You've been listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Noss. Our guest is Linda Schiller. You can find her at the website. I'll get her to tell us again in the last moments of the show.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
You want to know how to deal with nightmares and bad dreams and how to dream more joyously? Linda Schiller is one of those who will tell you. Linda, what is your website?
It's lindayaelschiller.com. And Yael is Y-A-E-L.
Y-A-E-L. Well, thank you so much for sharing all that you did today. It was a very exciting show. I think people got lots of practical techniques they can apply. And thank you for your vision of us all being hardwired for healing. That is a very optimistic view, and I'm delighted to have it expressed so eloquently. As we go forward, now all of us on the roads of dreams and of life, may our doors and gates and paths be open. And may the doors and gates and paths of any who wish to do us or those we love any harm be closed. May it be so.
May it be so.